Welcome to the Once and Future Authors podcast. I'm Stephanie, and I'm super excited today to be joined by author Maggie Smith. Maggie is such a prolific author, and her newest blind spot, I'm going to tell you from our author. Here's what she says. Rachel Matthews is used to stress, from the cutthroat world of the district attorney's office to her escalating clashes with her teenage daughters. So when a stranger sends a lavish bouquet with a macrame message and leaves a disturbing video on her doorstep, she's quick to act. Teaming up with an old classmate turns private investigator, she wades through old case files, searching for someone harboring a grudge against her. But before she has time to pinpoint a suspect, her stalker issues a demand. He wants money, lots of it, or he'll hurt her daughter. In a dangerous gamble, Rachel agrees to meet her stalker on an isolated beach, only to find herself fleeing from a shocking crime scene. Can she solve the puzzle of who wants to destroy her before she loses her family, her career, and her freedom? Please welcome author Maggie Smith. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Oh, I'm delighted. And I must admit, as the mother of a daughter, I get so nervous when the books have a kidnapped girl. I think I wanted to keep mine in a box forever. We all
Well,
have
as we discussed, mine is off in the state of Washington, being a free spirit, so I don't have
Yes.
any control over her
You have
anymore.
no more control. I get that. Mine's in her 20s now. I've lost all control
Yeah,
whatsoever as
no.
well. So what inspired Blind Spot? Hopefully not a run-in with your daughters.
No, no. Although I do seem to write a lot about mothers and daughters, that my first book was about that too. No, I was looking for a re well, first of all, I'm kind of a big suspense junkie. I mean, I read all the Agatha Christies when I was a teenager and then kind of looked around and said, "What do you mean she's dead? There's no more books." Wait a minute. I read 50 books or something, used it all up. And so Sherlock Holmes and Rex Stout, and now, there's many more to choose from. But I read that kind of thing a lot, and I read women's fiction too. But so I wanted to try my hand at it, and even the first book I wrote was kind of mysterious. I think I like books that have something that makes you think and you're trying to figure it out, maybe a little bit of a puzzle of why people are acting the way they are. And so I kind of started thinking about a revenge plot and what that would be like and why somebody would want to hurt someone psychologically and maybe physically. It just evolved from there. It's hard to talk about this book because it's a more of a suspense thriller, so there's
Right. You know what I'm talking
twists
about? Anything
in
past page 20. No, I get
Exactly, exactly. Well, we find out in the opening pages. The opening page is on my website, so people can read it. But we find out that Rachel has been arrested for murder, and that she's accused of murdering somebody. We don't know who it is. And then it kind of that's kind of the flash forward, and then we flash back to the last 3 months of how it built up to that part. So I'm not giving anything away there. But it is kind of the first half of the book is kind of who is stalking her, who is wanting to get back at her, who is saying that she ruined their lives. And then after that person is killed, it's more who is framing her for for this murder, and how can she find that out so she can save herself. So it's kind of a dual mystery.
Gotcha, gotcha. Now, you love reading all of these kinds of things. Can you sleep at night?
Oh yeah. Well, I don't like reading the real horror kind of thriller. If it's too gory, then that's not my taste. I like it fast-paced, and I like it more of a puzzle to try and figure out what's going on, and more psychological suspense than actual physical suspense. So
Now,
I
see.
don't have very much of that. I mean, there is a murder. There is more than one murder.
Right. But we don't see them skinned or anything. Nope, nothing else. But not plot related. I'm sure as a writer, because when you're writing puzzle books, I'll call it that, you're leaving little clues along the way. Now, did you ever have a reader find a clue that you didn't intend?
I
I've
don't think
heard that from
so.
writers
Well,
before.
right now I haven't had as many. This isn't as we're talking, it hasn't been released yet. So I've had early reviewers. And interestingly, one of the things I really like and has occurred a little bit in suspense books lately is maybe a surprise twisty ending at around 90% of the book. And then another one at about 98% of the book. And I do that too in this. And so there are quite a few people that kind of say, I kind of guessed that first one. I thought that's where it was going.
But
I
that
was
was the second one.
surprised, but I don't think I've had one person that guessed the last one. So
Wow.
it's a challenge to you readers. If you read this, will you guess that last one? And if so, drop me a line because I think that is what is intriguing the people, because a lot of the early reviewers are people that read this kind of genre, and they're really kind of saying, "Oh my God, I didn't see that coming." And they're talking to each other and on Instagram and things like that, and saying, "Oh wow, that she really fooled me." And they like that. I know that feeling as a reader of, "Okay, you got me. Okay, that was clever." And going back, there was one book I remember reading, Claire McIntosh's first book, I Let You Go. And at page 75, so for a writer, this is the end of the act one, there was this really big twist. And I actually wrote right in my book, "Oh my gosh!" exclamation point. And I went back and read those 75 pages because I thought, oh, how did she do that? I don't understand how I was so fooled. And so I wanted that kind of reaction from people, and I feel like I've succeeded. So that's fun. It's
I love
fun
that.
to fool people,
I
and
absolutely.
also it's not like suddenly I say, oh, and he's an alien, you know, or.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. There's got to be a balance between a twist, fooling people, shocking them, and like, ugh, stop.
That can never happen. Yeah. Or
Right.
who is this character? You never told me about this guy, and he came out of left field. The policeman that's the third person on the squad is no.
So that's a hard balance to strike. It has to be somebody that we actually have some sort of emotional investment in, or else the being fooled doesn't ever happen. We just feel like, who cares? We didn't like
Yeah.
that. We didn't know that person anyway.
Right.
Do you always know when you're writing?
Well, there were the second twist I did not know when I started. I
I love
just did
that.
the kind of regular old twist. And I thought, ah, that's not enough. I got to come up with something else. And so I did. And then I liked it a lot better. And there are also, when you write this kind of book, there are also questions all along the way, littler questions that aren't as important, aren't as shocking and twisty as those, but they're still questions. And I have one where, not to give too anything away, but she and her daughter, this is also has a very strong mother-daughter love story, I guess, you know, you'd say, in the middle of it. And her daughter and her are visiting a grave, and she notices that there are flowers, fresh flowers on the grave. And so that was a question. It was kind of, as I was writing it, I didn't plan the flowers. And then as I was just writing, I said, oh, and there's fresh flowers there. Oh, that's a mystery. So I kind of making little notes to myself. This is a question you have just raised. And you'll have to answer it by the end of the book. Who is leaving these flowers? And I didn't know who was leaving the flowers. I was thinking, well, it could be this person, but that doesn't exactly sound like them. And I don't think they do, but maybe it is that person. And I just kept kind of, and then organically, as I was writing the rest of the book, the person that it was came to me. And it was so, of course, that's who it is. And it was a perfect kind of wrap up to that little question. So that's an example of what's fun for the author, is that kind of serendipitous thing that you yourself are surprised. And then you go, hey, that's pretty good.
I love that. I love that. And I love that you're writing the book, but it's evolving for you too. I read a quote once that someone, an author had said that if they knew the whole story in advance, then writing the book would simply feel like taking dictation, but
Little
instead
bit.
evolving as it's going, which is exciting for the author, kind of like watching a movie you've never seen before.
Right. And I think also there's as you're writing, you're getting to know the characters. You want to know the characters when you start, you know, because they do have their parts to play. But you're also putting them in situations that maybe you hadn't thought of before and seeing how they react and knowing who they are. This is my old psychology background coming out. Knowing something about who they are as a person, you're trying to figure out how would they react in this situation. And so sometimes that's surprising to you. You may know them, but you don't know how they'd react in this particular way. So
No, that makes
that's it.
sense.
I do outline. I am kind of a save the cat outline person, because my first book took like three different times of writing it with the three characters, but in a totally different plot to get it out. And I thought that was really a lot of time that took. I don't want to do that again. So I do kind of plot it out, and that also seems to be satisfying to me as a reader when someone has some of the goalposts that you expect to move the story forward. Pacing is kind of one of the things people might call that. I just think it's important to kind of think of the reader and not just wander all over the place and not have a plan.
Right.
I want readers to feel like they're in good hands, that I've thought about this and I'm not just wasting their time for 20, 200 pages and then go, oh, and now I've thought of what I really wanted to say.
Goodness, I hope that's not what writers are doing out there.
Sometimes I read books and it feels like that.
It feels like
Are
that.
we going
Yeah,
somewhere
well, there is a point somewhere. Well, tell me a little bit about your background. You mentioned psychology.
I started as a journalist. I went to Northwestern School of Journalism when I first started college. And then I switched into psychology. And I did get a PhD in psychology, and I was a psychologist for a few years. And then I actually became an art dealer. I moved from Oklahoma, where I lived, to Wisconsin because I got married to a man who had some children up in Wisconsin or in Illinois. So we moved closer to be with them. And so we started this business where we sold artwork, and it evolved into kind of a big deal. It was a $4 million company, and we sold artwork all across the country, not to individuals and not like a gallery, but like to hospitals and senior living facilities. We had a government contract, so we sold to the government. And so when somebody I did that for most of my career, and then somebody came to me and wanted to buy it, and I had kind of run out of gas. I thought, I'm not going to take this to the next level. It's kind of done its thing, and this is kind of boring. And so I took the offer, and then looked around and thought, now what am I going to do? And so I was searching around for some things, and I'd already enjoyed the writing from journalism, and I thought I had some background in psychology of how people interact. And so I kind of started taking some writing classes and found I was pretty good at that and enjoyed it. So I kept that up. So I have my first book here, Truth and Other Lies, which I released a couple of years ago through a small press. And then Blind Spot, I started writing after that. So those are my two books.
Okay, you definitely the most unique trajectory I've had.
I'm
A
a
lot of
serial
authors.
entrepreneur. Yes.
Absolutely, I've met an awful lot of authors in my lifetime, but from a psychiatrist, psychologist, to an art dealer, to an author. But the author, what I've
My parents always told me I could be everything I wanted. They told me I could be anything I wanted, and I heard everything I wanted.
At
So
the
I
same
just thought,
time,
well, okay, I've done that for 20 years. What am I going to do
I think your parents were very wise to tell you that.
next?
Absolutely, I'm loving that. But you know what I'm finding so interesting is when you went from art dealer to author, it sounds so incredibly intentional. And that's not a story I hear often from authors. I hear, oh, I've
Like
been
to the
writing
need to ride, yeah.
kid and I always had a pen in my hand and there's always stories going on in my head and you sound so methodical, which the type A in me is loving here, by the way. Like, okay, what, you know, I have this break of time, I want to do something new, I'm going to take a class in this, that went well, boom boom boom,
Exactly.
wow.
Well, I was a very good student in school, so I have an entire bookcase of craft books, and I was a conference junkie for a long time. I went to seminars and conferences, and so I just kind of looked at it as, well, this is another learning experience. People say, oh, I'm a big reader. Well, there's a lot of difference between reading and writing a novel, and yes, it helps that you've read, and that's kind of by osmosis. You probably have some, if you've read good books, you have some sense of sentence structure and plot and dialogue, but it's a different thing to study it and see how would I do this myself. And so little things. I mean, would the average reader, if I said, how long are chapters usually? How many pages are chapters? I mean, I would have said, I don't know. How many chapters are there in a book? I don't know. So things like that. How long are sentences? How long are paragraphs? What's the mix of dialogue and setting and description? And so I almost dissected some books to see how they were structured and how they were made up. And there are patterns that, and particularly within genre, Blind Spot is much more of a genre book, falls in suspense thriller. Truth and Other Lies is women's fiction, but that's blends with commercial and literary, and it has a lot more amorphous shape to it. But a genre book like Blind Spot does have some goalposts you're supposed to meet. And so I just kind of set aside doing it. Now it's another thing to do the voice and whether you're actually producing something that is artistic. That's another whole thing. But you can learn the structure of it, I think, and that's what I set out to do. So
Well, I could hear that when you were talking about reading, being shocked by what happened on page 74. So you went back to read to see how they got there.
yeah.
And your casual reader doesn't do that. Your casual reader might say, oh, what just happened? But they keep going. And you went backwards. But there is a huge difference, as you were saying, between genre fiction, which has beats an outline, you can read a million books from fabulous writers about how to structure it. And when you wrote Truth and Other Lies, which is a little more like flying without a net.
Yeah. And because I didn't know what I was doing. I remember the very, very first coaching session I had with somebody. I had sent them some pages like we do, and I remember on the phone she said, "Well, we're going to talk about something very elementary, like what is a scene?" And I thought, and now looking back, I think she probably was shaking her head saying, "You don't have a clue what you're doing." It's something that I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I was learning,
Right.
and that's fine. We all have to learn somehow, and some people are more talented at it. Some people, do it, have done it, like you said, from the time they were quite young. And I had written as a journalist, but that's an entirely different kind of writing, so.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you were learning while also winning national awards, best debut fiction, all sorts of most people learn and it ends up kind of in a drawer. You learned and
Well, as I said, Truth and Other Lies had, I have three main characters in there. I have a 25-year-old young reporter, her mother, who is running for Congress, and her mentor, who is an older, like Diane Sawyer type journalist. And I had those same three roles in two entirely different novels, plot wise. At least one I remember was the mother was the illegitimate child of the Diane Sawyer character. That has nothing to do with what Truth and Other Lies is. So I wrote that whole entire book and had developmental editors say, no, too big a coincidence. You'll have to start over again. And I was like, no, I don't want to start over again. But I did, and I just kept those three roles because that was what was interesting to me was a young girl searching for who she was going to model herself after in her life, the mentor or her mother. And the mother is different politically from her. So there's, a little bit of politics in it. Journalistic ethics is certainly a part of it. So that was what I wanted to explore. And I could do that in a different plot, if you will. So I just rewrote that. So I, in fact, have one or two in the drawer, but they're the same book. It's just.
That to me is such a an amazing thought of self-control. And I'd love to think on that for a moment. How do you know? And you said you had developmental editors who said, but I mean, we're not all very good at listening to good advice. And putting 300 pages in a drawer and saying, all right, I like the character, but psh, that's not it. Start fresh. That's scary.
Well, I didn't only have one developmental editor tell me that. I actually had three developmental editors tell me that. I was preparing a seminar that I was going to teach about developmental editing, and I thought, well, this would be perfect. I'm going to hire three developmental editors and have them all give me feedback on the same manuscript. So I'll use that in my presentation. So I had three different people tell me kind of the same thing. One was much more specific, but I thought, and these people, I hired them because they supposedly know what they're doing and talking about, so better now than when I've got it out in the marketplace. And so, yeah, it's just it does, taking a story and writing it in a first draft, particularly if you've planned it out ahead of time and been thinking about it, does is not the major part of the time that it takes. The revision and the pre-planning is where the time takes. The writing of the first draft is just getting the story down, just telling the story to yourself. And so that really, for me at least, doesn't take but like maybe a few months.
But it is still incredibly noteworthy that you walked away, and that's so huge. You're a psychology person. The sunken cost fallacy, the sunken cost fallacy that keeps so many people into failing relationships because they feel as if I've been with this guy for 2 years, 3 months, whatever it is, I really don't want to dump him and do something else. So we all do have this kind of, I've invested so much in it. How many people keep things long after they should have walked away, whether it's a job
Or,
or
I remember, I remember something, hearing something when I was growing up, and someone said something like, well, if you do that, I mean, you'll be 30 by the time you get your law degree. And the response was, but you'll be 30 anyway.
No, you are absolutely right. And I'm going to go down in history that this episode is all about move on. Like you need to not sit there with inertia because you're going to be 30, because you've already written the rough draft, because of all of these things. If the world is telling you this is not it, this is not it.
Yeah, and a lot of very well-known writers will tell you that they struggle with doing that, and that they have books in the drawer. I mean, sometimes the first novel that you bring out is the one you've been working on for the longest, because if you get signed by an agent or something, then oftentimes you have 1 year, 2 years to. I was listening to Kristen Hanna the other day, and every 2 years or so, she's expected to write quite a phenomenal book. And so you don't have time to do that when you're being a successful author. But the first book, nobody's waiting for it. And so you can just fiddle your life away doing that. And I don't want to fiddle with something that's maybe that's the business person in me. It was like, that's not working, let's move on.
And that's how you get to the point that you can have your debut novel winning major awards. Because if you had released several things that really weren't ready for publicity yet.
Well, and I know enough about the industry now from being in it for 5 or 6 years. Your debut is always going to get more publicity, just because people like something new and shiny, and they've never heard from you before. And usually, it's debuts are usually very good because people have been working on them for a long time. So I like reading debuts. I actually think I want to improve with each book, and my husband and I were talking about this, and I said, I actually think Blind Spot is a much better book than Truth and Other Lies, because I think I've grown as a writer and I know more, and I was more intentional about it. And yes, Truth and Other Lies won a lot of awards, so this one's good too.
Absolutely. Now, considering that your two books are so radically different, women's fiction, literary, and now we're in this mystery puzzle genre, what's next?
Well, see, I don't view them as that different. It's kind of like, well, the Truth and Other Lies had a mystery in it. Did she plagiarize this
That's
story, and what happened to her mother? And Blind Spot has a mother and daughter
right.
story at the end of it, because she's a single mother and she hasn't told her daughter the truth about her parentage, and that's all kind of running in the background and actually becomes more central to the plot at various points during the
So
story.
more mothers and daughters. That's where we're going.
Yeah, so mothers and daughters. I mean, the very first seminar or workshop I took, the teacher gave us a prompt and said, answer this question I could never write a book about, and I remember writing Mothers and Daughters. And I thought, no, I can't stop writing about these people. So to answer your question, my next book, we talked before we started taping about how my stepdaughter is doing a nomad land kind of lifestyle at the moment and living out of a school bus. And so my idea for the next one has to do with perhaps her and her husband getting kidnapped and being held for ransom. And I don't know whether I'm going to do that or not. I've been a little bit thrown by the things happening in Israel and Gaza, and don't know that I want to write a kidnapping story right now. But until something different comes along, that's what I'm kind of noodling over.
Oh, I totally understand that. There are some things that may or may not be the right time.
Although it'd probably take me 2 years to write it, so hopefully by that time this will all be over. But
Exactly. So tell me about you writing for the next 2 years. Are you a desk person? Are you out on a lounge chair? Are you let me go on a retreat to Sedona? What gets writing going for you?
that sounds good. No, I'm more of a desk person, right? Well, I think people spend too little time on what I would call the noodling stage. They just start writing and start acting like, okay, well, it's NaNoWriMo and I'm sitting down and writing 50,000 words. And I think probably 50% of your time before that needs to be spent on noodling around about what the characters are, what the plot is, what you're trying to say, what the theme is, throwing out things that are superfluous, that's the other thing you run into with the first novel is you've had all these ideas and you want to get them all in here, because what if this is the only book you ever write? Well, you can't put everything in one book. And so you do need to, this is just a slice of a character's life, and you're not going to cover their entire life. And it's something important that happened that has something that you can say about life and characters and stuff. So I think you need to spend a lot of time thinking about it to begin with, so that when you then sit down to maybe even plot it out, which would be what my next stage would be, you've been noodling around quite a bit. And that's because everything I read and everything I watch and just living life, I find that I get ideas from that, and they seem to be ideas that I can apply to what I'm noodling around about. So I'm always just kind of keeping a little, I have a big moleskin notebook for this one book, and I'm always just writing down ideas, and I won't use all of them. But that's how you kind of come up with more off the wall things that you hadn't necessarily thought of the first time.
I love that. So 2 years from now, we'll have something new and fabulous to read.
It's called All in the Family. That's what I'm planning on right now.
Oh, okay. So we have a title, even though we might not have.
Yes. It might change. It might. We don't have a cover, but you know.
And how many books were about to go to press and they still didn't have a title? So there's that.
I have a friend that just announced on Instagram, here's my new title for my book that's coming out in September. And I was like, okay, what was it before? I can't even remember. It seemed nice.
I had heard the book Jaws, you know, the movie Jaws, the reason why I didn't swim for a decade. They were actually sitting around in the publishing house. The printer was waiting, and they had no title.
Really?
And all of the titles were much longer and involved and this and that. And someone at that meeting just said, how about simply Jaws? And none of us can picture that cover with anything other than just
yes,
Jaws. But yes, it was an incredibly last minute decision.
Yes, yes.
And well, how many movies?
Mine was kind of blind spot, was always kind of the people have blind spots and that they can't see what people are doing. They judge people in the wrong way. And that's because of their background. Again, the psychology of, you know, why do you view that person positively and that person negatively? It might have something to do with other people you've encountered in your life that they remind you of. And so that idea of, you know, how do we get around those blind spots and what does it take before we finally say, oh, I see what's happening now. So that was kind of the idea behind the name for me.
I love that. So we have a name for the next one. What it's going to be about remains.
All in the Family could be about anything.
It could be about literally anything. But that's good. It gives you enough leeway.
Right. I kind of have the big twist.
Oh, interesting. I love that. We have the big twist. We have 90% of the book in, but not.
Yes. And the name.
The name. No cover.
Yeah, last night I was thinking, well, instead of setting it here where, you know, I've set my first one in Chicago and this one in Milwaukee, and I live in Milwaukee, I thought, well, what if they owned a vineyard in Napa Valley? Would that
now you're talking my language.
What if?
I'm all about books set in a vineyard. I'm right there. Do you have the pre-order page up yet?
No, but I do love covers. I kind of, those people that follow me on Instagram, I do quite a lot about covers, other people's covers, and covers that remind me of, they're kind of clones of each other, and or they have the same theme or something. So that's my old art background coming out.
Well, from psychology to an art dealer to a celebrated author. You are, well, we want to keep you in the celebrated author for a while.
This is where I'm staying. Coming, I can wait at a desk.
I'm a little concerned that she's going to say, you know,
and now I'm going to be
an astronaut.
Maybe not. An astronaut.
I have no idea what's going to come next, but for now, we're thrilled that you're a celebrated author. Maggie, where is Instagram our best place to follow you?
Instagram is where I am a lot. That's Maggie Smith Writes, WRITES, and my website is maggiesmithwriter.com. There is another Maggie Smith that a lot of people know about, not just the actress, but the poet. But I'm writer, she's Maggie Smith Poet. So a little confusing, but it's my name. It's her name. So
Absolutely. And now we know one thing that our Maggie Smith will never be is a poet, because that would make it even more
right. Yeah,
confusing.
that would be too confusing. Or an actress.
Oh, yes. So she'll be an astronaut long before she's a poet or an actress.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, it's your name.
Instagram and my web page would be the two places. I'm on Facebook too, but I,
You're more on Instagram, I could tell. So we will
kind
find
of a
you.
visual person. Yeah.
I love that. Well, from all that 20, 30, however many years as an art dealer, I'm just dazzled by
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. I'm one of the rare writers that really have fun with social media. I enjoy making posts. I think it's fun. It's creative. And a good way to avoid writing. All of you procrastinators out there like me.
Got to get you back at that desk because there's more. But thankfully, in the meantime, we have the blind spot, a novel. Every move she makes, someone's watching. So you'll definitely want to grab this and Truth and Other Lies, and then we'll just have to wait and be patient. But thank you so much for joining me. I'm just blown away by your range. You have no idea. But for all of our listeners, I am just so loving your intentionality, and I would love for all of us to take that away with us, because we certainly have readers here, but we also have aspiring writers, and that's learning from the foot of the great here. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.